When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the December 27th edition of the PFF Forecast. It is a glorious episode. We did not have our normal Sunday night episode, so we will have to talk a little bit about what happened this last week. So in honor, we will have a new segment, Get Up or Made Up. It will be Chiefs edition. It will be coming at the end of the show. We will tackle the thing that no one else is willing to tackle, whether Russell Wilson is being unfairly treated. And as usual, we have same game parlay strategy, locks of the week, and a week 17 injury roundup. It's going to be a great show. Let's rock. It's official. The future in Denver potentially does not include Russell Wilson. How many future references do you think I will be able to make on this podcast about Russell Wilson? If you are joining us and you did not see the tweet that we sent out, we have Russell Wilson's future. You may think is gone. You may think that there's nothing left to hope for, but I really think he has a future in the football-shaped bread game. Brad, how would you assess the business opportunity within that market?
Diving right in, you said, is he unfairly treated? And you're taking your mask off and really showing who you are right out of the gate. I'm setting the over-under at like 1,000 for the next hour.
Yeah, it's gonna be quite a bit. Let me just say that I also am the owner of a really stupid bread idea. In fairness, though, I think my idea less dumb than Russ's. So Russell Wilson, we'll put this on the screen here so people can see this because it's truly delightful. I'll find it here in just one sec. Here we go. So this is real. We did not make this up. Apparently, you could purchase this. Somewhere. I don't know. I was never able to find it. This is Russell Wilson's football-shaped bread, which I don't think is the dumbest idea in the entire world. Like, there's nothing special about bread rolls, but if you happen to get some that are football-shaped and you're like a football fan, I can get behind it. My idea, fellas, was revolutionary. In college, I had a ton of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And if you know anything about peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you know that you eat it and the peanut butter and jelly just falls out the bread. It's a huge pain in the ass. So I came up with a concept called moated bread, where there is a moat around the outside of the bread that keeps the jelly and the peanut butter from squeezing out the back. Let's just say that, and I will attest, I was completely sober when I came up with this idea. I was ridiculed massively. In fact, my roommates still make fun of me to this day for that idea. I stand by it. I think it's a great idea.
I don't know what it's peanut butter like sandwiches you're eating.
Go ahead.
But I never had peanut butter and jelly fall out of my sandwich. I mean, what kind of peanut butter were they making out there?
I mean, do you put, like, I know some people are weak and they don't put a lot of peanut butter and jelly, but if you really put a hefty amount of peanut butter and jelly and your peanut butter, maybe it's creamy, maybe you don't put it in the fridge like an animal, it squeezes out the back, okay? It's not particularly – people in the chat get it, okay?
No, it's a real concern. That reminds me, too, when you mentioned that, of the controversy of the scooped bagel. I don't know if either of you guys saw that, where some California person came to New York. And can you imagine, Jude, going into a bodega and asking a guy to scoop out the inside of your bagel? Like, he would spit in your face and tell you to leave. So, anyway, that's what that reminded me of.
The perfect call.
The scoop bagel. I mean, the you could scoop a football bread, a piece of football bread. All right. That's enough. We'll get back to Russell Wilson at some point here. We have actual things to talk about from a football perspective in terms of quarterbacks that are playing this week. Some of which are dealing with a few injury concerns. I know that Trevor Lawrence, for example, some question as to whether he will play or not. So why don't we get to the injury roundup for week 17, Brad?
Yep, for sure. So we got the big one is probably keeping an eye on Trevor Lawrence with that shoulder. Didn't practice today. Doesn't expect to throw much at all this week, but wants to push to play. You know, yes, he's better than C.J. Beathard, but is that a better outcome? Who knows? At this point, did not look good in their past game. All right, we got Courtland Sutton with a concussion for the Broncos, and Jarrett Stardom Stidham. Cole Kmet is probably not going to play, had a knee injury in the second half of Chicago's game. Hasn't practiced this week. Looked pretty bad. And Darnell Mooney is now in concussion protocol. I think it's interesting for some props and stuff later on. DJ Moore is basically the entire passing attack already, and now you lose your number two and number three target. We got Isaiah Pacheco, also in concussion protocol, so it's a big CEH week for fantasy football. If you're in the finals, why would you not fire up a former first-round pick in Clyde Edwards-Helaire to get you over the hump? For the Chargers, against our guy Russell Wilson, Josh Palmer is now in concussion protocol, and Keenan Allen is still dealing with that heel injury. Tyreek Hill, I think, is going to be good. Rested today, but I think it's just more rest and veteran stuff than it is, you know, that the ankle's bad. On the flip side, Jalen Waddle, it's called a high ankle sprain. They've kind of tried to say, like, it's not as bad as it seems. Maybe he can play. High ankle sprain and playing the next game is not the most common of occurrences. So I think he might be out for that Ravens game, which is obviously a big, big loss. And then I think that's all I had. So yeah, fill in the blanks there if I missed any, but those were the big notable injuries that I had down.
What would you put the Trevor Lawrence playing odds at?
Like 60%. Like, I think he'll find a way to do it. You know, it's a shoulder injury. As long as it's not going to, you know, re-injure it, I think he'll try to push to play. He like doesn't miss games. So yeah.
I think the markets agree there also. I think we would have seen this line trickle. It moved from 7 to 6.5. I'm not sure how much of that was just like kind of regular flow we'd see from like Carolina playing well, the Jaguars kind of struggling. I think if like we had confirmation that Lawrence was out, this line probably moves to like 3, 3.5. So I think the 6.5 implies a, you know, likelihood of Lawrence playing, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I mean, will CEH, is he the missing link for the Chiefs? Is this the reason that their offense has been able to figure it out? Maybe the bundle, the most valuable bundle, is just missing a little CEH. Maybe that's the issue. Nothing made me more annoyed on Christmas morning than seeing the Kansas City Chiefs offense sputter, die, and you know, decompose on live television. And then every single commercial break, I was hit with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes doing some awful commercial. The irony was really too much. But CEH will resurrect them, no doubt about it. Okay. Anything there, I guess, guys, that we see in terms of taking advantage of from a betting perspective? Judah, I know you mentioned the Jags game, but anything else that catches your eye?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll talk about Miami. I think this just could be an absolute feed Tyreek Hill sort of game. That, like, I might want to lever up there, but nothing else, I think, to note.
The someone in the comments, by the way, was talking about the AFC South division winner. And I'm going to pull up the odds right now. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Obviously, we have some Jags futures. Brad, I know that you're a little nervous about those. How are you kind of going into this week, given that you have
those? Yeah, there's a Week 18 matchup with Indy and Houston, so that probably does – if it comes down to those two, that'll decide it. They both have soft opponents this upcoming week too, though. Well, the Raiders, I guess, isn't the easiest game in the world, but that's who the Colts play. I want to say in Indy, I believe it is. Yeah. And then Houston – yeah, and then Houston – thing there, though, too, I should have mentioned, like, I think C.J. Stroud plays. I believe the market is reflecting a price with C.J. Stroud at -5, but – I can't say it's 100% certain that he plays in that game. So obviously Panthers is huge, you know, for the Jaguars. I think they could find a way to beat them even without Trevor Lawrence at home. But yeah, I haven't bet it, to be quite honest. I'm kind of just riding it out. All three teams have a bunch of cupcakes to close out the year. So I don't know. I'm just sitting on tickets.
The current odds at FanDuel, Jags -168. The Colts +340, and the Texans are +400. We have the Jags winning in our simulations 58% of the time, the Texans at 21 and the Colts at 21% of the time. So, you know, with that, I think, you know, if you're going to bet one of those options, the Texans at 21% would be the play. And what's interesting there is you also get the best quarterback, I think, right now, pending you think CJ Stroud's coming back from a concussion with relative health, because Lawrence is banged to shit. Like, that he is really in a bad way. I feel like every part of his body has been injured. He reminds me a little bit of that Andrew Luck season where Andrew Luck just could not make it out of a game without getting annihilated. And honestly, his performance kind of reminds me of Luck as well. He's making a ton of big time throws. He's graded pretty well. Also a ton of turnover-worthy plays. And overall, the stats are not really, you know, kind of showing how well he's played. So I think it is kind of interesting. And if you are a believer in that Luck sort of continuing, pun intended, through the end of the season, I think the Texans are a great bet.
I'm with you now. I did not realize it would be that steep. I have no reason not to bet Houston and just hedge out a little bit. So I'll be doing that.
Great piece of content there. Thank you to Mojal, who is a consistent listener of the podcast. Good topic of conversation. Let's get into same game parlays. We have a full slate. I feel like week 17 and 18, by the way, Judah, are a ripe opportunity for this because there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of unknown. There are a lot of backups, and we talked about Stidham coming in for the Broncos. And so there's a lot that just isn't known that probably won't be priced in.
Yeah, I think that's honestly a great start. And also, there's just like aside from just quarterbacks, it just like teams are really starting to kind of let loose on giving guys more run. And it's a difficult thing for books to kind of price in the full sample that they usually do with medians with like new adjustments for new players, which leads me straight into my first play, which is Saturday night. We're going to be betting on Jameson Williams. I'm seeing some 80 yards and a touchdown. You can get close to 30-1 on some books. This is a guy who has seen the field, I think, close to 70% of the time each of the last couple of weeks. Is running way more reps than he has previously. Dominant by our separation metrics. And of course, is a massive home run threat. He's going in a matchup against a Dallas team, which, as we talked about for a bunch of weeks now, when they can't really generate quick pressure, this is, and they do that all the time. They've got a like 40% quick pressure rate. That's by far the best in the NFL. The secondary is very, very vulnerable. None of their guys are above average. Jordan Lewis is like right at average at preventing separation. Nonetheless, I don't think anyone should be scared of that. This is a Detroit offensive line that is now healthy, can mitigate some of the effects of the Dallas pass rush. I also think they're going to have some quick hitters. And Jameson Williams is now running all sorts of different routes. He's not just this deep gadget player there. His route tree has really expanded. The prices are reflecting Jameson Williams from week, you know, 7 or 8 when he was really just running a bunch of deep balls. He's playing more often. He's got a very different route tree. He's in a great matchup. I absolutely love that spot.
Yeah, and it makes sense too, because St. Brown went through a little bit of a lull there. Now he came back with a vengeance last week, but they need a guy on the outside, right? They have Laporta and St. Brown on the interior. And I feel like that offense needs to try and develop him if they're going to make a playoff run, in addition to kind of going forward. So big fan of that. I also think we'll talk about this game a little bit more. I have some thoughts on this one from a locks perspective. Alrighty, where to next?
Yeah, similar theme of a guy whose role has changed over the course of a year. This is our king, Rashid Shaheed. No longer just a deep threat. This is a guy who led the Saints in snaps last week. Granted, Chris Olave coming back from injury. I still do not anticipate he's at full health. Nonetheless, this is a guy who, Arjun commenting on whether Jared Goff has enough arm strength to hit Chamo in stride. You know, he'll be so wide open, it doesn't matter. But
Jared Goff, he said. Jared Goff. I think that was not a typo.
Definitely not a typo from our job.
But anyway, back to Rashid Shaheed. I don't think I need to say more about what a dominant player he is. And I think the Saints have kind of realized that he is more than just a kind of deep gadget player. He's playing a lot. This is a guy who can win at every stage. The Tampa Bay Bucs have also been allowing the most yards, the most targets, the most, you know, everything you name it to wide receivers. This is a guy who has the, I think, clear 1A role to Chris Olave. I think we'll be seeing that even, you know, going towards next year. Obviously, Chris Olave is a terrific player, but Rashid Shaheed really is up there with the best in the NFL at receiver. He's in a great matchup. His role has changed. The books are going to be pricing in a sample of Rashid Shaheed as a guy who is much more of this gadget type player, was fighting for snaps with Michael Thomas and a bunch of these other guys. That is no longer his role. He's in a great spot. Another kind of one of these builds of a Rashid Shaheed alt with the touchdown, especially on points bet, is something that I'll be looking into.
Yeah, what kind of a price are you getting on the great points bet?
So I haven't seen anything. The Saturday night game is released early, just because it's a day sooner. But I anticipate we can get like a 95 plus at like, maybe this is too ambitious, at like, 12 or 13 to one. But that would be something I'm really eyeing. And you know, it's a very sneaky good matchup for Shaheed.
The great Baker Mayfield. This is quite a matchup of quarterbacks here. Both like the way that Mayfield has been playing lately gives you the feeling that they can't just win this game like running the ball. Like I feel like they're gonna have to put up some points to win this game. And I think you saw that. Was it on Thursday night against the Rams, right? Rams get out, they're winning the game. It's like, okay, screw it. We've got to throw the ball down the football field. And when you have to do that, certainly you're going to throw it to Shaheed as their best deep threat. It makes a ton of sense. All right, where to next?
Yeah, I think this is the next one. Going to go to Jared Sittum and the Broncos, betting on the Broncos passing offense. This is the Broncos kind of changed their philosophy. We talked about this a bunch, but in about, I think it was like week 6 or week 7, they basically said, okay, this offense can't move the ball. We are going to hide Russell Wilson. We're going to try and win the turnover battle. We're going to run a ton, shorten the game. And it worked, for 6-7 weeks. I don't think that's how Sean Payton wants to operate this offense. Again, there's a little bit kind of building in and maybe coaching my bet here, but at the same time, this is kind of exactly why you want to hit on a tail, because if you're right about this is where there's value. And I think we see a much pass-heavier offense than we're accustomed to seeing. And where I think that's very valuable is in the wide receiving props, where you have a guy like Jerry Jeudy, whose fundamentals have not changed. And like I think people have just like written off Jerry Jeudy as not a particularly good receiver. He struggled at the whole Steve Smith nonsense scandal or whatever. This is a guy who is separating at the same terrific rate he has his entire career. He gets open. He's dynamic after the catch. And we have a sample of Russell Wilson's been a terrible quarterback, and we really don't know what Jared Sittum can do in this offense. If anything, I think it tilts towards positive. We saw him come in last year in a spot start and absolutely light up the 49ers. But I think Jerry Jeudy's a really interesting case where we're going to have a guy who's, attached to an offense with a very low play volume, very low yardage outputs, and I think we see an entirely different offense this time around, especially if Cortland Sutton is out with his concussion. I really like betting on Jeudy against the woeful Chargers defense.
Yeah, Chargers defense not been good. Although interesting, I mean, did you notice anything without Staley that gave you any kind of additional confidence in them? Holding the Bills to 24 points, I don't think is the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I think the Bills are frauds, but that was a separate that was a separate conversation. Right, we talked.
We need to have this conversation. Okay, you think the Bills are frauds. I think the Bills are the best team in the AFC. Tell me why you think the Bills are frauds.
Because they refuse to let Josh Allen throw on early downs all of a sudden. It's just like, let's run the James Cook show. This is not like look, they could always just change and go back and let Josh Allen throw, but that's not the offense they're currently running. They're like trying to get Ty Johnson involved. And throw to running backs. It's just, it's a disaster. Stephon Diggs has taken a huge step back. They like had trouble with secondary receivers to begin with. Now they don't even have their dominant number one receiver. The defense has been a lot better recently. They've kind of regenerated their ability to get pressure. But this is not, can it change? Absolutely. Will I jump off this take immediately if I see that the Bills have back-to-back games with, you know, pass above expected of 10%? Sure. But that's not how they're running their offense right now. And I don't think they are currently rated appropriately by the market based on the way they're running this offense.
So I definitely hear where you're coming from. I think the Cowboys game was a very, very fluky game in large part because the Cowboys did not actually show up to play in that game. So, you know, when you're playing against literal ghosts, you know, you should expect a game plan that is accordingly spooky. The reason I actually think that I am emboldened by the Bills despite this is that I really think they have said to themselves, okay, we need to do everything we can in situations where we believe we can win the game without relying on Josh Allen to do so. And the reason for that is that their entire offense went to crap when Josh Allen couldn't run the ball. And that was because he was injured and they couldn't afford to get him more injured. What I did see early on in that Cowboys game and as well in the Chargers game was a willingness to run with Josh Allen when need be. Now, you can't do that consistently, and you're going to want to pick your spots. But in the playoffs, certainly those are the spots that you would pick. And then you just look at how good Josh Allen has been. You know, highest graded quarterback in the NFL. The Stephon Diggs thing does worry me a little bit, Judah. But looking at his separation numbers, I took a look at this. He's still separating at a pretty high level. And so it's not something where I'm concerned like Travis Kelce, where all of a sudden he got like shot with a tranquilizer gun in the thigh and, you know, can't move down the football field. So, so all of those things to me are kind of the ebbs and flows of the season. And, you know, I think right now you'd be hard pressed to find someone that wouldn't take the Ravens coming out of the AFC. I remain resolute here. The better quarterback is Josh Allen. I'm not saying that Lamar hasn't been incredible. But you're not going to convince me that the Ravens are the best team in the AFC because they got, you know, 5 tipped interceptions from Brock Purdy. The Niners moved the ball on the Ravens. By the way, so did Sam Darnold. The Bills to me are just still the more potent offense. And actually, you know, what they would do, what they're doing with their design run game, I think that's the missing piece that I see for the Ravens. Now, maybe the Ravens pull it out in the playoffs, but I'm sticking with the Bills here.
I don't think we disagree here, which is what makes it so interesting. I just think that there's almost this built-in expectation. Like, it wasn't just the Cowboys game that the Bills have gone run heavy. It's been, and you know, if you're going to have the success that you will, or they did have, like if you're going to have 99th percentile rush after, like by all means, run the ball the entire game. That's smart. But this is a pass offense that's been struggling and has not, they've been run heavy, and I don't know last week's numbers exactly, but before that it was like 4-5 straight weeks of running way over expected, which is a troubling sign because they do have the best quarterback, but it's a problem if you're playing the Ravens, and the Ravens are leaning into Lamar Jackson, passing way over expected, actually utilizing their best weapon, as opposed to the Bills, who are just like, we're going to live and die by James Cook. That's not how you win playoff games in January.
Brad, what do you think? Where do you stand on the Bills?
Yeah, I definitely see Judah's point for sure. Where it's just like what they're doing right now, if they continue to lean into this aspect of their offense, is it going to sustainably have them win against the Miamis of the world in week 18, et cetera? And I think the answer would be no. You know, that's interesting. At the same time, like, is it almost like a trying to hashtag establish it and then get some more favorable looks for when they are in 12 personnel and want Dalton Kincaid to be treated like a tight end and not as a effectively in 11 personnel receiver? Like, is it maybe setting things up for later? So like, are we by reacting to what's happening now, not accounting for that maybe there's a counterpunch? But like, yeah, I would agree that if they keep doing what they're doing right now, it's not the most, the tail outcome, most favorable outcome on offense is not from this. It's from letting Josh Allen cook.
I think that I've been a Joe Brady believer for a while. I don't think Joe Brady's strategy is, hey, I'm going to, you know, handicap my quarterback. I think he's, you know, we've seen in situations where he has an elite quarterback how he wants to, you know, throw the ball. And I think they will throw the ball in those situations. So maybe this is me coaching my bet, but I think it's more likely something where, you know, the games, and I know your point, Judah, but I'd also say that that Kansas City game, like, I don't know what their pass or their run over expected numbers were in that game. Maybe you have it offhand. But against such an anemic offense, you don't really need to throw the ball to win, you know? So I can understand why.
All they needed was Kadarius Toney to line up off sides.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jokes aside, too, the Chiefs' run defense is terrible. And particularly with Nick Bolton not in the lineup, it was like the worst in the NFL. And their coverage unit's great. So, like, I do also see what you're saying, George, where it's like, yeah, Dallas, if they were down, they probably wouldn't have done that. And the Chargers are the Chargers. Oh, shout out Jif, Jif Smith, your co-founder for your bowl of bread, you and Jif Peanut Butter Smith. but yeah, anyway, I think both sides have valid arguments. Well, I guess we'll learn a lot. Miami game, I think, will teach us a lot because Vic Fangio's defense is looking pretty good.
Has been phenomenal. While we're on the topic of this past week, I wanted to ask you guys your takeaways on the Ravens-Niners game. And kind of in the context of this, this is the presumed Super Bowl matchup. What would you make the spread of a Niners-Ravens rematch in the Super Bowl?
Niners by 2.5.
I was going to go Niners by 3.
Yeah.
And so Brad, I guess you're saying that game taught you a decent amount because it closed 6.5.
Yeah, it did because, well, first neutral field because it was in San Fran, right? So obviously point and a half or so there. The Ravens did not win at all in the manner in which I kept talking about. Like if they are going to win, it's going to be super low scoring and they're going to run the ball well. Like that's not what happened at all. Lamar was remarkable under pressure. And as we know, there is obviously some variance in that. So we shouldn't necessarily say, therefore, he's going to be again. And the game script worked out very well. But yeah, like it's just that they won in ways I did not expect. And I also do just think like the kryptonite to this offense for Kyle Shanahan is having a Kyle Hamilton and a Roquan Smith. Like those are the guys you need to shut down this type of offense that can cover over the middle, that can take on number 3 receivers, tight ends, backs, whatever. It's just they're so well constructed to beat this team, ironically enough, weirdly enough. They really are.
Yeah. I think that's right. But at the same time, my takeaway from this game is that like game state is so important and game flow for how football games kind of happen. And like when a bunch of random things, such as Brock Purdy tipped interceptions, kind of lead to the Ravens going out ahead, it tells one narrative. Like, oh, this Ravens defense was great. And you can like look at the same game, look at the fundamentals and say like, actually, the Ravens defense really struggled to stop the Niners on a yardage basis. If these two fluky things didn't happen at the exact times in which they happened and led to a specific game state, it looked totally different. And we're having a totally different conversation. I think you can say both that we learned something about this Ravens team that like they can keep up scoring wise with the Ravens and granted they had it with the Niners and granted they had a ton of short fields, but right. It's not just as Brad, to your point, like it's not just that they have to win by slowing the game down and playing a totally different style. And at the same time, we can also say that this game is extremely fluky and the Niners are also still a wagon. And like this game would look totally different if a few fluky things didn't happen at the times they did. And I think that's just important to keep in mind.
The Niners had a better EPA per play in that game than the Baltimore Ravens did if you exclude the interceptions. Now, the first interception was a nightmare of an interception by Brock Purdy. The others were all tipped. I don't remember exactly how many were turnover-worthy plays, if any. But if you look again at an average yards per play perspective as well, Niners actually had the second highest average yards per play in a game last week. Outperformed the Ravens rather significantly in that regard, 6.7 average yards per play in that game, while the Ravens sat at 5.1. I actually thought that the Niners defense did a fairly decent job in that game, ton of short fields for the Ravens. I initially said I would make this Niners by 3. I kind of think if they both make it back to the Super Bowl, or they make it to the Super Bowl, Niners will have gone through, you know, pretty impressive kind of top tier of the NFC. Game being played in Las Vegas, I think, is an advantage for the Niners. I would lean towards 3.5, actually, in the Niners' favor in that game. But I think it probably settles at 3. That would be my guess of where it would end up.
Yeah.
All right. Any more SGPs? We took a little break there. Shoot, anything else?
Some quick hitters. You mentioned Miami. I like that spot. I think Shocker. Cincinnati betting on Browning against the Chiefs. What are these smiles? I don't know. That was okay. Fine. Betting on Browning.
You said shocker. You said shocker when you said you liked Miami.
Oh yeah, exactly. I like CJ Stroud here. I mean, maybe the line moves a little more when it's guaranteed that he's in, but this is a spot against an extremely beautiful Tennessee defense. A bunch of these sorts of spots of either kind of uncertain quarterbacks that we've been talking about for a couple of weeks now against bad defenses, or just a couple of, you know, big underdogs. I'm going to take a shot on Bailey Zappe again, following another sweet, sweet cash on Sunday night. But we'll get into more in-depth SGPs later this week on PFF.com.
Yes, where you can check it out, as usual. All right, let's get to this week's slate and get it kicked off with some locks for this week. Brad, where do you want to start?
Yeah, I love Judah and I are in sync. We were in sync last week with James Cook, and obviously that came through for us again. So J-Mo was one I was going to mention. An alt receiving yards over for J-Mo. We can make a decision on what we like there. But 40 is plus 125, I want to say, which is what I looked at. And I think Judah touched on it. It's obviously like the snap share, the route participation, the actual route tree and what he's being asked to do, I don't think is being properly reflected in the market right now. There was an initial bump in playing, but he was still just running clear out routes and just running go routes that were kind of not really part of the progression. And I think now you're seeing him actually be asked to do a lot more and be more and more incorporated. And I think it's a good matchup against the defense in Detroit or in Dallas, excuse me, that plays as much man coverage as anyone in the NFL. And if they try and get up and press Jamison Williams, like, We need one bomb here where he beats Deron Bland or Stephon Gilmore off the line and it's single high coverage and the safety can't get over, to defend, down the sideline throw, and we probably catch 40. So I love that play.
Yeah. I was going to propose a JMO 65 yards at plus 475. Cause I think if this hits, it's really going to hit. We're going to see a bunch of these kind of deep shots connecting. So I do like that one. My first lock will be Rams minus 4.5. I'm seeing this is a spread I didn't understand to begin with. When the, you know, at 7 or 6.5, I thought they should have been on the other side of 7. This is a Rams team with, not into, you know, like splits of guys in general, but when all of their guys are healthy, when Nacua, Kupp, and Kyren Williams are in, they are first in every offensive category by a wide margin. This is a Giants team with certainly nothing to play for. If anything, there's not that this is the main driver of the bet, but as an ancillary part here, this is a coaching staff with a lot of rumors, players unhappy. We could have some kind of playing to get your coach fired type of situation like we've seen a couple of times seemingly this week. But at the end of the day, this has nothing to do with the bet. The markets have moved a couple of points from Tyrod Taylor to Tommy DeVito, and like maybe that's justified, but I didn't think the base was right to begin with. The Rams are a far better team. We don't see gaps of offenses, you know, between what could be a top three offense in the NFL this year, if not top one when everyone's healthy. That's just been the reality. And a Giants team, which is like 31st or 32nd in every category. I don't care who's playing quarterback. 4.5 is just not enough points.
Yeah, I like that one. So I'm going to go back to the Detroit game because I have two angles here that we didn't talk about. You mentioned the quick pressure from the Detroit Lions from the Dallas Cowboys. And I think this plays into the probably the biggest mismatch from a wide receiver and cornerback perspective which, as you can see on the screen, is the 119th ranked corner in the great Jordan Lewis against the number 8 ranked wide receiver in Amon-Ra St. Brown, who got it back in the plus side of things last week. And, you know, in a game on the road where you figure there will be at least a little bit of a threat of a pass rush, despite how good the Lions' offensive line has been, I do like Amon-Ra here again. 82.5 is the line that I see currently up. And then the other side of this, I wanted to ask you guys about this because 6 feels a little rich to me. And I know that the total is high. I know that the Lions just won their division. And so you figure there's a little bit of, you know, okay, we just won, exhale, all of this stuff. I tend to want to fade that narrative. 6 to me just feels like we're way overconfident about the Cowboys in this situation. I feel like this should be much more like 3.5. Now, I know that's not crossing a key number, but 6 just feels like a misprice to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't even think with the narrative of like seeding, I guess, doesn't really matter. Like, I don't think any of that stuff matters, frankly, at all. I was going to highlight this matchup later, but on this note too, I already love that a lot of the passing matchups for Detroit. We just talked about 2 of them. The Lions are also number 1 in the NFL in EPA per rush on runs between the tackles, and top 5 in success rate. And like every traditional statistic, they're like way up there too. It's high volume. They have 300 more rushing yards between the tackles than the next highest team. That's actually where Dallas struggles. A lot of people talk about it last week with the Miami matchup. It's more so, they draft Mozzie Smith in the first round for a reason. They took a nose tackle, 28th overall. He doesn't play because he's not very good right now. Jonathan Hankins been out. Their linebackers are a bunch of safeties. Like, they get killed. They get gashed on runs between the tackles. So not only do I like the passing matchups, but if Detroit does get a lead, I think you're going to see Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery average 6 yards a carry up the middle. Like, I hate this matchup for Dallas. So even if they do win, I also think it's going to be a close game. You know, the Lions will sustain drives, be able to finish out drives with touchdowns, not field goals. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, that's interesting. You actually see some somewhat depressed rushing totals for these guys. So Gibbs at 54.5, Montgomery at 59.5. Largely, I'm guessing, because of the macro, you know, if you're a 6-point favorite, like, what are those rushing numbers going to look like? So I think that's a very, very, very good point. You could play some alts there as well. Like Jahmyr Gibbs, 80-plus is plus 280. By the way, it's funny to think about what people were saying about Jahmyr Gibbs early in the season. Currently is having a better year than Bijan, which is sort of insane. Has been really, really good lately. Okay, let's keep it moving. Brad, where are you going to next?
Yep. So, shoot, now I'm thrown off now. So, I mean, I guess we're kind of hammering this game a little bit too much. So, I guess we'll pick one though. But the Lions on the flip side, bottom 3 in the NFL in EPA per dropback and success rate, and I think receptions, and again more traditional stats against slot receivers. So, CeeDee Lamb over 6.5. And I guess if we're taking a bunch of, like, there's a narrative argument too. If we're taking overs on a bunch of props, it's kind of correlated to a degree. So anyway, but yeah, like, it's also a matchup I do not like. On the flip side, I think CD goes off in this game.
We talked about in the Proptacular episode how if we saw Jalen Ramsey line up against CD to take his unders, and Fangio decided that he was not going to do that, and CD just torched them. I think he went over his total in the first drive or second drive of the game. There's no one like Jalen Ramsey in this game. you know, not really sure how they plan on matching up with CeeDee Lamb here, but where is CD? I guess is there a chance that he could catch Tyreek to lead the league?
Probably not far. He's probably not far.
I haven't, because of the way that Tyreek's performed, I haven't really looked at that recently, but CeeDee Lamb, I think
he's behind by like 200 yards.
So, you know, not totally out of the realm of possibility. But yeah, that ended up being a pretty sharp bet, I think, given where he's ended up this season. All right, where are you going to next, Judah?
Yeah, this is not no pricing yet, but I think this will be an interesting spot for overs and potentially alts. And that's going to be Bijan Robinson receiving yards. So a couple of reasons for this. Number one, the Bears are allowing 10 more yards to running backs than the next closest team. They're allowing the most receptions to running backs, et cetera. And then also this, you know, crazy idea where Arthur Smith, rumors of him getting fired and all that, he decided actually maybe I should play my first round picks kind of to save my job maybe. And like he actually gave Bijan Robinson, you know, 75% of the snaps last week. And oh, wait, he was actually extremely successful. I think you're betting on talent in a great matchup. And I would bet on this role continuing for Robinson, them leaning on him against a sneaky Bears team, which has been great against the run. And also, yeah, Brad, I know. You're Bears. And also been sneakily good defending the pass as well. I think kind of a way to extend the run game is a bunch of quick passes to running backs where the Bears have struggled to defend. That is an area in which Bijan Robinson has been great. Can also break one, which leads me a little bit to his alts. But I will be on the Robinson over receiving yards. Unclear yet what price we'll get there.
Yeah. Very interesting. I was hoping that we would have one of my favorite props from last week would be live again, which was Miles Sanders, his rushing prop. But those I do not see up yet. It was at 21.5 last week. I think he would have needed 22 carries in order to go over that. And shot him. He didn't quite
get that. 925 yards. We got the under on Miles Sanders. The easiest, you know, sweatless running back profit with no injury I've ever seen.
By a country mile. So a couple of areas here that I'm looking at from an under perspective. I think that the market in general, a little high on the Cleveland Browns going against a Jets team that has a really good set of obviously corners. So a couple areas, I think you could look at Amari Cooper there, his total of 58.5. And I really like Elijah Moore in large part because of how good the slot has been with Carter II there in the slot. His total is at 34.5. You might look to receptions, but I don't see him currently listed there, unfortunately. Amari Cooper, you can get 4.5 receptions and under 58.5 receiving yards. But I think market a little high on where Joe Flacco has been. You know, he certainly has played well. I think it's a little crazy to think that, you know, that he's played that freaking well. But I do think that this matchup favors the Jets here, and especially given what we saw Amari Cooper just do, I kind of like you know, going against that narrative here in this game. Although I know it's very tough to bet an under.
I thought we were going to go traditional. I know Judah wants more normal bets. The Jets plus 7.5 to me is kind of crazy. Yes. Here I'll even give like a hotter take. I don't think the Browns even have the best defense in this game. Like I really don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Browns defense is awesome. Sure. We know defense is dictated a ton by opposing quarterbacks and all that. Like, go look at what the Jets have done against, like, the elite quarterbacks of the NFL the entire year. You know, struggle against Miami, I suppose, but, you know, both times. But, I mean, just so many good outings against so many of the better offenses in the NFL. The only trepidation is just, like, motivation. Like, you get this massive lead against the Commanders, kind of stop caring. If it gets off to a bad start early, do they kind of just fold up and go home? But yeah, I mean, Joe Flacco's throwing like 5 turnover worthy plays a game. And the Jets are going to pick those balls off, not like let it hit their hands and let him, you know, throw for 200 yards in the fourth quarter, shout out the Bears, you know, or let Amari Cooper set a PFF record for completed air yards in a game in the history of PFF's database. The Jets are not going to let that happen. So anyway, I thought about that one, but one that I love that also Judah mentioned in an SGP market that is not out there yet, but the Tennessee Titans to targets to receivers lined up out wide, last in EPA per dropback, last in success rate, last in receiving yards, last in receptions. They are horrendous at throws to out wide. And another element I like here too is you talk about you kind of betting on a Stroud and a Nico Collins in terms of coming off injury, where the market's going to be there, but also with Nico Collins, 11th in the NFL in yards after the catch. Like, we know they kind of built the plane out of explosives. They can win over the top, and they can win with him getting yards after the catch. And the Titans are – they're missing tackles. They're bad in both facets. They're actually kind of middle of the pack, though, in, like, deep yards allowed. They just – like, out wide, they just miss tackles. So I think he can win in either facet. But I'm thinking, like, alternate over yards, Nico Collins, or I suppose we just SGP it up with Stroud. But nothing's out there. But I love the angle there.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that as well. I like the Stroud comeback narrative quite a bit. Judah, where are you going to next?
Yeah, I think it's my last one. This is going back to the Detroit-Dallas game, which really loading up here. And you have Tony Pollard under 13.5 rush attempts. This is a real Lions pass funnel, a team which has been great against the run. You know, granted, there's the fact that the Lions have led for a bunch of this baked into the stat, but they've allowed only 17 rush attempts per game, which is towards the very bottom of the NFL. The Cowboys have been kind of mixing in a bunch of backs, not giving Tony Pollard the lion's share of the work. But really, I think there are kind of two main pieces here. Number one, this is a Dallas team completely unafraid to just let Dak Prescott drop back 50 times. They are not looking to stay balanced. Clearly what the matchup dictates, they're terrible against the pass. And I also think there's kind of baked in the Cowboys are 6-point favorites. They're going to be leading by a lot. But as we talked about, I think there's a lot of value actually on, you know, the Lions side of this things. I don't think it will just be a situation where the Cowboys are going to have to bleed clock. And I don't think they're going to want to, you know, just give Tony Pollard a bunch of carries, 13.5. At -105 seems like good value here.
Yeah, big fan. I have a few different ones here, and I realize that the sun has gone down, so now it looks like I'm in a cave. So try not in my parents' basement. Still in my office. A few spreads that I do like quite a bit. The first, and we talked about this one, Brad, a little bit at the outset. The Broncos and Jared Stidham are -3.5 at home against Easton Stick in the Los Angeles Chargers. Spirited performance from Giff Smith and the team last week, okay? We talked about that potentially, you know, being a little bit of an angle we liked. This week, I'm not sure I like it so much. They're on the road. They're in Denver. It's Easton Stick. Jared Stidham, I think, has been fine. I think he will be fine in this game. And I just, you know, again, I think all of the reasons why Sean Payton is going to want to put an A-plus game plan out there are pretty obvious. So I like the Broncos -3.5 in this game.
I hate to ever do narrative stuff, but, like, I think it's one of my favorite narrative spots. I mean, like, they gave Jared Stidham 2 years, $10 million. Like Payton made a statement, like, this is, like, a guy that they probably wanted to start earlier. Frankly, I couldn't love it more. I think they're going to like run up the score on this Chargers defense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Okay. Any more from you, Brad?
I'm all tapped out.
Okay. I do have, a couple more that I think are interesting. A few, matchups that could be worth taking advantage of here. We found out that Jair Alexander no longer, I don't know what you technically would call this, but he ain't playing for the Packers. We talked about this one, Arjun and I, last week. It was ridiculous where Justin Jefferson's player prop was at. It was below 90. That was a joke. I don't think you're going to get that again this week, but the Packers certainly won't be able to cover him at home. That is an absolute fact. Another one that I think is interesting, and you have to see where these numbers come out at, but Puka Nacua, clearly, I think the number one option in Los Angeles for Matthew Stafford. Giants cannot cover in the slot. It is a complete nightmare for them. And so we'd be looking at Puka Nacua overs. And then similarly, Brandon Ayuk versus the Washington Commanders. you saw in that game, and this is one of the things that I noticed watching that game, he is open all the time. It is, I think, the one criticism I have of Purdy in that game. It's like, why were you not just throwing Brandon Ayuk the ball the entire time? Sam Darnold came in there, was like, I'm just going to throw to Brandon Ayuk, and like, you know, it worked. In Washington, I think they will probably watch that film and go, yeah, we need to get this guy the ball a little bit more. So you may still be able to get a number there that's a little lower because of the garbage time yardage that he got in that game. So a few additional bets that I like. Let's do a little get up or made up before we go to pick our locks. You guys ready? All right, I have four. Yes, I came prepared. Okay, so the way this game works is I will read something that is coming from the show on ESPN called Get Up. If you don't watch it, you're missing out. Tremendous content. A la the Quibi segment that we used to do, the fellas will guess, is this something that is actually from the show or am I making it up? All right. Number one, Ma'ato accident. Are the Chiefs in need of a new insurance provider or can Travis Kelce turn it around? Our guy, Dominique Foxworthy, tells us why you shouldn't give up on the Chiefs just yet.
Real.
Dominique Foxworthy changed his name?
Yeah, yeah, Jeff Foxworthy and Dominique Foxworth crossover collab. <Yes. laughs>
I'm with Brad here.
This is fake. Although Ma'ato accident is a get up worthy tagline. All right. Next up, the most valuable bungler. Is Patrick Mahomes to blame for the Chiefs' woes? The big swagoo weighs in next.
Bundler from the State Farm commercial or bungler?
It's bungler. It's a play on words, Brad.
Okay.
Get Up does not, they hire a very good content crew. Okay. Their copywriting is A+.
The guy who writes the tickers at Get Up is legitimately the William Shakespeare of our time. Yes. Like,
I'm disappointed George has not had that line first, honestly.
So you think this is real?
Go ahead, Judah. You go first this time.
I think this is fake.
I'll go real.
It is fake. I'm the only one that could come up with most valuable bungler. I am getting MVB shirts, though. I want to wear a Patrick Mahomes MVB shirt. All right, next up. Joe Cool now lives in Cleveland. Why Kimberly Martin thinks the Browns are legit Super Bowl contenders. Next on Get Up.
Get Up. Final answer. Lock it in. Confident. High confidence.
Complete non sequitur. Complete non sequitur. Joe Burrow lives in Cleveland. It has to be Get Up.
This is real.
Yeah.
Kimberly Martin does in fact think the Browns are Super Bowl contenders, and I am here for it. And last, we have one more. A swift downfall. Rex Ryan on why the Chiefs would have been better off if Travis Kelce had a more normal obsession, like, say, a foot fetish.
The first half was for sure real. The pivot at the end, I'll let you go first again.
Can't be. George, I was very creative, though.
Thank you. Yeah. I tried to show up with some quality. That is fake. They are not. There is no way that Get Up is in a position to make fun of Taylor Swift. They don't have the stones to do that. You'll only find that talk here.
I want to give you some more credit real quick, George. I think you also do a phenomenal job of. You tie the quote or the whatever to the person that I most believe would be. I have Rex Ryan foot fetish, like I get, but like you know, like it's like, all right, this is a Foxworth, like this is a Kim Martin, like it's there's a science to it.
I am a student of the Get Up game, okay, fellas. I am a student of the game. We didn't have a Dan Orlovsky, so we'll have some Dan Orlovsky content for you next week. He was out this week. He's got a family, fellas. Okay. He's got to fire off some absolutely heinous food takes to try and get some content out there on the Twitter for you guys to react to. He's a busy man. So we don't have any Dano this week. We'll try and get some next week for all of you guys. All right. Let's pick some locks. So here's what we've got. Options we have. Jameson Williams, over receiving yards. I think you had 62 and a half, Judah, was what you liked. Was that
65 it? 65 plus 475. And then, or Brad's over 30 and a half.
Let's go big.
Okay.
You go big or you go home. The Los Angeles Rams minus 4.5 against the New York Football Giants and Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
Amon-Ra St. Brown over 82 and a half receiving yards. The Lions plus 6 points. Sidarius C.D. Lamb over 7.5 receptions at minus 110. We don't have a number for this yet, but Bijan Robinson over receiving yards against the Chicago Bears. Elijah Moore under 38.5 receiving yards for the Browns and the Super Bowl contending Browns, I should say, against the New York Football Jets. Nico Collins in C.J. Stroud's return, an alt over of 80 plus. Do we have a number on that or what we think it would be?
Just the number I picked. No, it's not out yet.
Yeah, my guess would be that's like plus 150.
That's what I was thinking. What do you think, Judah?
I think it's going to be higher. I think it's going to be like plus
200. Higher, okay.
Plus 200, we'll take it. Tony Pollard, under 13.5 rush attempts, minus 105. The Denver Broncos, minus 3.5 against Easton Stick and the Los Angeles Football Super Chargers. I threw a few player props out there we don't have numbers on yet, but you can feel free to include that in your own bunch here. I'll get us kicked off. The one that I think my favorite actually is this Tony Pollard under rush attempts. It fits a lot of the narrative that we've talked about. But I actually think that it, as you look for in a lot of these props, also in a situation where the Cowboys win by a large margin, I think he could still go under because they'll have to throw the ball. And I think the Lions will be able to score here as well. So that's my favorite one. I like all of these, though. Where do you fellas land?
I just post this comment here with Bijan, and maybe you want to go alt over Judah, but I love that one a lot. I think you're going to see Jalen Johnson kind of shut down Drake London. Taylor Heineke didn't practice today, or he was limited. Like, I think Bijan's going to get fed.
Ooh, I see some alt receiving yards here. Beautiful. You can get 40 yards at plus 230, 50 yards plus 400. I like 40. Yeah. I think a couple big catches there gets us over. I'm definitely a big fan of the Jameson Williams one, obviously. I also really like the Elijah Moore under 38.5 yards.
I'm going to say the same. Revenge game. I'm sure the team kind of hates him, kind of forces his way off the team. Michael Carter has been awesome all year. And I do think actually there was a narrative. Someone else brought this up, and I'm blanking who it was, but it was interesting and probably just kind of anecdotal, but I think a lot of people bet slot receivers against the Jets sometimes because they think Sauce and DJ Reed are awesome because they are. Michael Carter has been one of the highest graded slot receivers like the entire year. Like, he's very good. He's awesome. So anyway,
didn't even think about the revenge, but it's a double revenge. It's Moore and Flacco revenge. Yeah, in particular, Elijah Moore.
Also, not just any type of revenge game, by the way. Both had sour either exits or lack of, in Joe Flacco's case, communication. That's a really, really want to stick it to the Jets there.
Yes. Trevor Siemian had to have been a Brown at some point, too. There's no way Trevor Siemian wasn't on the Browns roster at some point. Like, gotta be.
That's the other thing that I like about the Elijah Moore under is I think that there's a chance that Trevor Siemian has an abhorrent game, in which case there's just not going to be a lot of yards for the Browns to pick up, and then they just run the ball.
Totally. Yeah. Him with that protection. Yeah. Anyway. Yes. All right.
Yes. 1,000%.
Go ahead. All right. J-Mo, I think we are in agreement there.
Yes.
Let's go. Elijah, for sure. I'm with it there. I think Bijan is one of, and then Pollard are my four favorites, but I think we go six pack personally.
Six pack. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those four, I think I love. Broncos minus 3.5 is my favorite spread of the spreads we talked about. Or in the nose. Yeah.
I bet it at 3, so it like feels weird to.
I know,
like,
so did I.
Well, I still like at 3.5 though.
Okay, so we're gonna get a 6-pack going. I like the case. I like the case for Nico alternate. I really, yeah. We can get AV plus at close to 2-1. Titans can't cover CJ Stroud. He's got nowhere else to go with the football. So let's throw Nico in there.
Yep. Love it.
And then we got one more, right?
So we got JMO.
JMO.
Did we do Rams or not yet?
No, we haven't put the Rams.
Okay, JMO, Bijan, Elijah, Nico, Tony, and the Broncos. Is that 6 or?
That is 6.
That's 6.
Yeah. Boom.
That is our show. We hope that you have a wonderful dead week between Christmas and New Year's. We will, we have to check our schedule. Be back on Sunday night. Maybe we can figure this out right now. I have no idea whether Sunday is in 2023, 2024, 2025. Sunday is New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll figure out what that looks like. I'm a loser and I do nothing for New Year's Eve. Most overrated holiday, by the way. Can we agree?
I agree with that. It's just now it's become just like commercialized and like it's a mess.
Totally. You're not watching Packers Vikings. What are you doing?
Fellas, I would have no qualms getting on here and guessing some lines. So we'll see. Maybe we'll do a New Year's Eve podcast. Who knows? But we'll let you guys know and get after it. We'll do something this weekend, no doubt about it, since we are almost there at the end of the season. That was our show. We love you all. Peace.